All righty. We are studying the sealed book of Moses within the sealed book. And today is Mother's Day, Sunday, the ninth day, thank you, ninth day of May, 2021. And we are in chapter 16 of the sealed book of Moses. And we just read verse 16 last week. So last week's study was mostly about, oh, you got to lean forward and be in the picture. There we go.
Okay.
It's mostly about the calling of the first presidency and how the church is being set up according not only to the order of Enoch. I think today it's going to say according to the order of heaven, the way the church is set up in heaven. So this is, that's an important detail. And that the first, well, we're going to actually have the actual calling today. Last week we talked quite a bit about how the indication was that the two counselors in the first presidency should be Aaron and Hur, because they were the ones that not only held up the arms of Moses during the big war, but had this lot of good counsel, like to sit down so they could easily hold up the stick over his head and things like that. And the last verse here, 16, has just said that Jethro really is just getting totally converted to how much stronger the Lord is than all the gods of the Egyptians. Because even where he was up in the land of Midian, they worshiped, the Egyptian religion was all over. It was up in Chaldea. It was in Midian. It, from the book of Abraham, shows that. So it was sort of like the world religion, and it was a big deal to show that there's a God greater than the gods of Egypt. Okay, that was the catch up.
Okay.
If there any comments before we start on anything? If not, then Harm, can I ask you to maybe just read 17? I think all these verses are worth discussing separately. Read 17 for us.
Okay. And it came to pass on the morrow that my father-in-law saw all that I did unto the people, and said, behold, it is not good for you to continue like this, but surely you must do as the Lord has revealed to you. But hearken unto the voice of him whom God hath appointed thee to hear, and I will counsel thee, and God shall be with thee.
Okay, comments.
Yeah, interesting. I think, hark unto the voice of him who had God appointed thee to hear.
Who do you think he's referring to there?
Well, his father-in-law.
Yeah, himself, yeah.
Yeah, but it's interesting that he should speak like that he was. I think it's a process for both, that Jethro himself is beginning to understand that he was chosen to be his teacher in a way, you know?
Right, a counselor. Also, he won't be a counselor in the presidency. He's going to be the patriarch, but
yeah.
But yes, he knows he's an official part of the leadership now. What was it that Moses was doing wrong that he needs counsel?
he was trying to do everything himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was not delegating. He was, Moses was, he saw all that he did and he said, it's not right. You're doing way too much. You can delegate. You can give others responsibility.
Also interesting, it's not good for you to continue, but surely you must do, you know, he puts in a safety net. Surely you must do as God has revealed to you. You know, I'm just saying,
right.
You know?
Yeah, he's not saying. He's not taking power to himself, saying,
no,
He's not being proud saying, hey, I'm smarter than you. Let me straighten you out.
Yeah. The whole figure it out thing we talked about the time. That he has to figure it out, and it's between him and God. But I think, you know, and that's interesting. I think it's so, it feels so closer. You can imagine, listen to your wife.
Exactly. Listen to your wife. Listen to the people that are called to be counselors, to your mother on Mother's Day.
Yeah, exactly.
Children growing up have someone that...
Someone just wrote an article about Venus. I don't know. You know, it's amazing.
Venus and Jupiter.
Go ahead, Jeannie.
To me, so Jethro didn't say, oh, look, I'm going to counsel you. I'm going to be one of your counselors. He's taking a different approach, and that's interesting because we haven't heard that before. As we talk about the setup, which definitely is taking him out of the presidency and into more of the counseling
advisory position.
Yeah, and that's how the, because we haven't talked about the patriarch, have we?
No, not at all. It's just going to come up and see when we. I'm just writing a paper. This is sort of a news thing. I'm almost finished with an article about the revelations of Joseph Smith III, who was president of the reorganized LDS Church for about 50 years, from age 30 to 80. And he gives a detailed description of what a patriarch should do. And one of the main things is not just blessings, but counseling. Counseling, it's all spiritual. He's not supposed to do anything. He's not supposed to handle any problems in the church. The church members are told, don't go complain to the patriarch and put your burdens on him because the bishop's not doing what he should. He is to be free from all of those responsibilities. And that's not in here. That's why I'm telling you that. But I'll notice that there's a big dash
right before that.
Before that. And so at first it says it's not good for you to continue, then a big dash, which means that something has been left out there.
Oh.
And then after that dash, it says, but hearken to the voice of him who God has appointed. So I bet something in that dash is telling us that God is appointing Jethro in some way. And the dashes, I'm not sure who put them in, because at the beginning of this book, Moroni, who's translating it, says, I always get mixed up if it was Mormon or Moroni, but whoever translated it, the words of Moroni explain it, but anyway, says they're not giving us the whole seal. We do not have the whole sealed book. We have part of the sealed book of Moses, which we're ready for. And some of the rest of that, I think, is going to be in the other part that we're waiting for. And so whatever's in that dash probably explains something about why suddenly Jethro knows that the voice of the Lord has called him to do something.
But is the dash also in the sealed book? Like this?
That's what I see. That's what I don't know.
Okay. No, I think the dash is indicating information that Mauricio has not given us. Yeah. Mauricio did know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's not giving us.
That's what I think it is too, but I don't really know because of what Moroni said, that he's only giving us part of it. I believe Russell's correct. And you know, once I complained and said, look, a dash in English means something different maybe than in Portuguese, because in English, it's like a super comma. It's like a big pause. And there's usually two of them. And I said, I don't think in the Doctrine and Covenants anywhere that there's a dash that means this. And Mauricio corrected me and he said, no, I will show you several. And there's several places in the English Doctrine and Covenants where there's long dashes and not two of them. And he said, that means something was left out. And he knows those things. And so I didn't complain anymore and I put the dashes in. That's when I was translating some revelations, I think. Okay.
But the sentence that follows gives instructions for us to do now.
Yeah.
For us to receive the dash.
Yes. Any other comments on this verse before we ask Bakia to read verse 18? Okay, 18.
Be you the leader of the people before God and teach them the statutes and the law of their church and make known unto them the way in which they should walk and the work which they ought to do. And of thy people Moses, seek out able men, fearful of God, men that cherish the truth, who hate covetousness, and designate them under your hands, the office of elder, each according to what the Spirit of God shall direct thee. And thou shalt give him functions in the physical administration of the people of God through the lesser priesthood, and give the positions of spiritual administration of the congregation of Israel through the greater priesthood.
Okay, comment.
I had to look up covetousness. Like, how do you say it? Covetousness?
It's perfect. Yes.
Covetousness?
Covetousness. It's hard to say.
Okay. So it's kind of a greed, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Covet thy neighbor.
It's coveting. Covet is to want something that somebody else has.
Okay.
So it's a specific kind of greed. You have a new car, and not only do I want a new car, I want your new car. It's to want something somebody else has.
Yeah. Well, that's in the Ten Commandments.
Yes.
But yeah, good habits of people.
Okay, so seek out these men, and what are they supposed to do?
Yeah, they have to be fearful of God and cherish the truth, and have covetousness, and
And those are good. And what would those jobs be?
They're supposed to be doing the physical administration of the church.
Right.
Yeah, bishop-like things.
And right. Bishop, but also
all of the. Solve a lot of the smaller problems. It'll say that also in the next verse, but everything, like, all the physical things.
Yeah, like what now happened with the United Order of Zion thing.
Yeah, that's a physical thing.
Well, physical, there's going to be a spiritual part of it too. The next verse.
Of course.
But the physical part, just think of all the, like all the printing of the Book of Mormon is all a physical thing, you know, and getting all the chairs set up for conference and, you know, and getting all of the, making the new conference center and all the lighting. I mean, there's just so many things that have to be done, and building things, they're all very important. It's not like they're less important. They're just physical instead of spiritual.
To me, it's not really, to me, it's just saying the only thing between physical and spiritual is that physical is with the lesser priesthood and spiritual is with the greater priesthood. It's not making any distinction, saying you need to find a bunch of people, but you're going to divide them up by physical and spiritual and give them different priesthood responsibilities.
Right. The next verse, let's read the next verse now too.
But can I just make a thing that I think?
Sure.
To me, I think it's interesting that the very first qualifier that he gives is that they need to be able men. too often it's like, oh, well, I have this prompting that so-and-so should go and take this calling in the church, and they may not be able to do that. And that's the first thing, is you need someone that's even able to take that calling, that position, that assignment. You know, not just that they're qualified, but that is the first qualifier, is are they in a position to even do this? Or are you going to overly burden them? Do they not have the skill set to do it? That sort of thing.
Excellent.
Well, and it does say, even before he talks about the duties, he says they're going to have the office of elder. And the LDS Utah Church designates these to the Aaronic, like, okay, wait, I'm not saying that right, but it's the elder. It doesn't say they all have to have Melchizedek priesthood. It just says right. they're an elder. And I think that's important. And the other thing is that it talks up here, after able men, it says fearful of God. I've heard so many people misunderstand that terminology, fearful of God. And maybe, can everybody just say what they think fearful of God means?
I've been battling with that because I have no fear of God, but my fear is being without God. That is my fear.
That's a good explanation.
Other comments? Anybody else want to comment on fearful of God?
Yeah, it's a Dutch saying. It's very annotated. The phrase des Heeren, the fear. It's so pounded in 400 years of Calvinism that you should feel burdened and guilty all the time. Yeah. And that you did the judgment day, and but it is truth, and I think we can face the judgment with the cherish the truth, you know, which is the third one. So we have to be able and recognize the arm of God in everything. That's that can be fearful, but also recognition. I think that we're so small. In the whole thing, but if we cherish the truth, hate come, and also hate. I think hate is pretty heavy. But we have to hate. God says we have to hate, but we have to hate the wrong. You know.
Yeah, hate and, covetousness. Yes.
Yeah.
Are there any other comment on fearful?
Yeah, I have one comment. I think it's not necessarily fear, but reverence, acknowledging God's position, so that because of that reverence, it puts us in a different situation. It's acknowledge God and acknowledge what he does and so forth.
Jared, what are you thinking?
Just again, and most of you know, I always go back to Webster's 1828 dictionary. I love the definitions that we have. But not, basically, it's a real long one, but not to be confused with dread, terror, or fright. But I really like how it says, fear is the passion of our nature, which excites us to provide for our security on the approach of evil. So fear is the emotion or passion that says, hey, I've got to do something to protect myself from evil. And so if you're fearing God, you really understand and you have that passion of what I'm going to do so that I don't go the wrong way.
Okay. I will now say my thoughts on fearful. Not that I think I'm right, but it's going to be a little different. I think fearful means fearful. All my life, I've heard in the LDS church that fearful means reverent. We're going to learn in the next few verses that God is going to come down on the mountain, and anybody that touches the mountain, any animal that touches the mountain, has to be stoned and killed because they dared to touch the mountain of God. They did not have actual fear. I'm saying it's a very high form of reverence. And something I'm working with is I am not fearful enough of God. I tend to be casual in my prayers and make jokes, and that I try to make him laugh, and I still am going to do that. I think that's, he needs to laugh sometimes, but the reverence that's so reverent that you're actually realize you're in big trouble if you make a mistake. One problem that has happened somewhat in Brazil with Mauricio is he's, you know, when you're right with, when the prophet is up on the stage and a big, you know, the armed guards around him are coming home, you tend to have this awe of it. When it's the guy next door and he's your buddy and he's on the, and I'm staying at his home, and not enough people had enough fear of Mauricio, and he would tell them things and they were from God and they wouldn't do them. They did not have the respect, the fearful respect. And there are those, some of those are now in major trouble because they did not have respect for the word of the Lord that came through Mauricio. So they had no fear of him, is what I'm saying. So I'll just put in a little word that I think it also means fearful too, as well as everything you said. Yes, reverence, respect, acknowledge. But there's some actual fear that it's, think of the child and the father, where the father is strict. And my brother's son once said, somebody, his friends all said, hey, let's all go do such and such. Our parents will never know. And he said, oh no, I can't. My dad would not allow that. And he said, why do you always obey your dad? And he said, because he's so big. You know, he was very big, super strong. And they knew that if they went against him, they would be punished. So they had fear for him as well as honor and respect and love. And I believe that's kind of the model. Anyway, that's just, I'm taking too much time with my own belief, but I'm working on getting more fear. So that's what I'm doing. That's just my personal.
One really quick thought I've always had is that, yes, God has made us. We're coming down here on earth because we have a mission to learn and be able to do the right and prove that we can come back. And our Lord and the sacrament and the atonement and the crucifixion and everything. It gave us the salvation. But the fear that we ought to have in some of my thoughts is that if we don't do the right, that can all be dissolved in an instant. You know, we've been given the atonement, but we have to also earn it. And so it's not just a given. We can't just sit down here and do what we want and have it be given to us. And that to me has a fear connotation to it, that I need to behave and do what I'm supposed to do, or Heavenly Father does not have to pick me out of the fire and say, you're coming home.
Thank you. Before Valera reads verse 19, if she would, I'm going to add one thing to that. I knew I had a mission to do long ago, especially in the sacred calendars. And I was all excited and happy and everything's great. And then I found out that I could fail. Joseph Smith himself was threatened that if you goof up, if you make another mistake like he did at first, when he let the 116 pages out and they were lost, if he made another mistake, he could fail and be replaced. And the day that I realized I could fail was fear struck my heart, and fear of failure. And that has kept me working all the time. Okay, Valera, can you read 19 for us?
And since the people are very numerous, appoint officers in the priesthood of Melchizedek to take care spiritually of the congregation, which you will call rulers, yea, rulers of 1,000, rulers of 100, rulers of 50, and rulers of 10, that they may judge this people at all times. But every serious cause, bring it to you, and every little cause they will judge according to the knowledge that they will obtain through you.
Okay. Comments.
Well, I thought it was interesting that in verse 18, they talk about being offices that an elder can hold. And now in 19, we're talking about spiritual offices that the priesthood of Melchizedek can hold. And he's using this in a spiritual way, setting up the order. And it just makes it easier for everybody to kind of be on the same page. And then if you're someone in charge and you're brought a problem and you don't know how to do it, you have a counselor above you, you can go to them and you can get help. All of this pertains to the order of the church on spiritual matters. I do believe that all of that still ties back into how it said Moses needed to seek out able men with those particular qualities. But one of the traditions that we have in the LDS Utah Church is that this is a governing way that the whole world will live under in a governmental way, sort of like the way the government, those people who are in charge, tell you what to do, take your money, you pay taxes to, in that sort of a government ruling way. And I'm sure that's not what the Lord has in mind when he sets up this lineal order of spiritually taking care of people. And I think that's something that's been missed.
Thank you. Other comments?
So I have a question or a comment. So it's saying that elder is part of the lesser priesthood. Is that what it's saying? And that the anyways, it just says.
That is the very kind of question I left as a teaser. We'll get back to that. I'll come back to that because that's going to be one of my main points.
Okay.
Great question. That's what I left last week to say, wait a minute, what's going on? I'll say the question again now, but then, and that is at the end of the last chapter, he said nobody was worthy of the high priesthood of Melchizedek, so it would not be given to anybody. That was in verse 15 of chapter 15. And now he's saying you can take people of the priesthood of Melchizedek and give them. So let's talk first before, I wanted to resolve that. And then we'll get to that, Lisa. But what's the job that these men, he talked about a job in 18 for those men, what they would be doing, physical things. What's the job of these new men that they're going to be doing in this verse?
I'll judge it all time?
Yeah, judge it. This is the judging. And it says, I'll be judging according to what you'll be given. This is given before Moses goes up on the mountain. We'll read that actually in the next chapter. When they get to Mount Sinai, the wilderness of Sinai to the holy mountain, which I believe is called Horeb. We all call it Mount Sinai, but it's the mountain in the wilderness of Sinai. He's going to go up on that mountain and start to get the law. So he doesn't have the law yet. But
May I ask you one thing, John?
Yeah, but let me just finish the sentence. But yep. I'm trying to remember his name. Jethro, is giving Moses this advice and saying you should set up these men to be judges according to the law, which is going to be given. So this is the spiritual part, the spiritual law. And as Jeannie said, this is the government. The laws of their land are the laws of God. And so just like we go to judges to be judged with a dispute with our neighbor, they're going to be judged according to the law of Moses. That's a spiritual calling. So these men are to be spiritual judges and to take care of all the little things and then work up to Moses. Okay, Hart, what do you think?
Well, I was interested on your thoughts about, because I thought maybe because the spiritual thing of the congregation, the measurement that it says in the New Testament, I believe, angels' measure is God's measure. And I was thinking maybe this 1,110 represents a kind of level, and then the 50 falls out, you know. But maybe that has to do with the 49, the Jubilee.
I have exactly the same problem. What is 50 doing in there? You have judges at 1,000, 110. Yeah. That makes sense. 50, what are they going to do? I wasn't going to bring that up.
Okay.
But that's in the Bible. I mean, this is how it's done. I don't know, but I don't know. Okay. It's in there, but it seems like it shouldn't be to me.
Yeah. So that's why I brought it up. But
technical question. I don't know if anybody has an idea there.
I have a question about to take care spiritually of the congregation. I think that's an interesting sentence. And yeah, how that came to pass, we know a little bit about because of what's in the sealed book about what to do, to talk about feelings you have. But it's interesting to know or think of how they organized that.
See, to me, it's very much like what LDS would call a ward within a stake. It's over at least 100 people. It's usually about 300.
The
bishop is what? The bishop is a judge over disputes, and he is also the one that gives the spiritual talks, and you know, he's the spiritual leader of the ward, and he's also the judge. So to me, this is very similar to what we would call a bishop, and a thousand is like a state president. And I don't know what the 50 is.
at the end of the last of verse 18, it says that all of the lesser priesthood is the physical administration, and the positions of spiritual administration through the greater priesthood. So kind of what I'm trying to learn from this is the high priest, because we're not talking about high priest yet. The spiritual priesthood back in chapter 15, I think it was, or maybe a different chapter. When Melchizedek gave the priesthood to Abram, and then he later became Abraham, they were definitely talking about the differences of the priesthood levels. And I think that the LDS Church, the way they delegate the Aaronic priesthood to these smaller areas is incorrect, now that we think of how much there is to do in the church that's physical, like John had just said. You know, it isn't just putting the chairs up. There's a lot of things that go in that. Children, teenagers can't be involved in all that stuff. But this is saying that that's still a part of the lesser priesthood, and definitely saying the spiritual part is the greater priesthood, which is why they don't talk about Melchizedek in the first one. They talk about him in the second one, because it's more of the judging.
Right.
Maybe that's more of a way to think of the differences.
Okay, let me give you my thoughts. I started the 10, that's like a family. The 50 is like a home teacher, home minister. The 100 is like the bishop, and the 1,000 is like the stake president.
Oh, thank you. I can sleep now.
Well, I'm not sure if I'm accurate. I asked, and something came into my head, and I still have to decipher who's communicating with me. But the rulers of 50, something said, they go throughout the world. I don't know.
Oh.
That's a thought. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's interesting.
Which is kind of like what he said, you know, but it's not just local, it's worldwide.
Yeah. Yeah, what they're not doing that at this time, but yeah, there's a lot of things we don't understand and can keep going. Okay, on let's one other difference on the physical, just think of what the Levites did with the Aaronic priesthood, all of the work in the temple, all of the preparing of everything, doing physical sacrifices. I mean, you know, the killing of animals, etc. Building the temple itself, all of that are huge, important physical things. I just thought I'd throw that in too.
Well, that's a good point. You know, your teenagers wouldn't have been said, okay, you go build a temple.
Oh yeah, I'm not talking about teenagers, right.
Yeah, I'm saying that we don't understand the Aaronic priesthood well enough.
Yeah, yeah, in the Bible, it says a deacon should be married, you know, and
yeah.
That wouldn't do with our 12-year-olds, so we'd get in trouble, I'm sure. So, okay, let's come back to this question. I'm just gonna tell you my answer to the question I asked, because I think it's not obvious, and I think almost no one has understood this, and I believe it's been shown to me. I've written articles on it, and I keep finding things that verify it, and this is something that verifies what I've talked about. There's levels of priesthood, and then there's callings in the church. And I think what we're learning here is an elder is a calling in the church. And it's also called a level of priesthood. They had a level in their church called an elder, which was a Aaronic priesthood, which is talking about here. But an elder can also be of a higher priesthood. An apostle can either be an elder or can be a high priest. It's a calling in the church. And there's confusion when you don't have the right names for the two things, the levels of priesthood. I will suggest that there's clearly at least two levels in the higher priesthood. One is the level talked about in 19. It never says high priest in 19. It says officers in the priesthood of Melchizedek. In the Doctrine and Covenants, section 107, it says there's at least two levels in the priesthood of Melchizedek. There's a high priest and there's an elder. And there they use the word elder as a, well, no, they don't. You know, if you read it carefully, elder is an office in the church which requires a lower part of the Melchizedek priesthood. And we have not had a name for that. In my articles, I have suggested a name for that. And it comes from section 84. It says, those men who gain the higher priesthood and keep the covenant become the sons of Moses. And those who keep the lower priesthood becomes the sons of Aaron. Now we call the lower priesthood the Aaronic priesthood, named after Aaron. And I have suggested the name, the Mosaic priesthood, to be the level of priesthood that is talked about in section 19, where you can have men called. They don't call them elders here, but in the LDS and in our church, we do call them elders. They have a level of priesthood to do spiritual things, but they are not high priests. There's different levels in the priesthood, and it's a big problem in understanding. Joseph Smith took time to understand it. In the history of the church, the priesthood of Melchizedek after the order of the Son of God of high priests was restored in June, on Saturday, June 4th, 1831, more than a year after the founding of the church, which had elders in it who could do spiritual blessings like confirm people members of the church. And Joseph Smith in the documentary history says, this is the first time that the high priesthood of Melchizedek has been revealed in the church, was that day. And then there's footnotes on that written by later LDS saying, oh, well, he didn't mean that because he didn't know that apostles would be the highest. No, actually, he didn't mean that. He knew what was going on. Brigham Young changed it. Anyway, I'm just saying there's little things like this, Lisa. So now, have I answered Lisa's question?
I think so. What section in the Doctrine and Covenants were you talking about?
Section 84.
84, thanks.
It'll talk about the covenant of the priesthood, the sons of Moses, and the sons of Aaron. And see, well.
You said 88.
Not what? 88, 84.
Oh, okay. Okay.
About June 4th and.
The high priesthood after the order of Melchizedek was restored on Saturday, June 4th, 1831. And let me comment on that date. That date has been in dispute. If you look in the church history, if you look on the internet for that date, you'll say somewhere between June 3rd and June 6th, because there was a three-day conference. We don't know when it happened. I read in some journals that it was Saturday, but when you look on the sacred calendars, it's clearly Saturday afternoon that it was restored. In a revelation given to Mauricio, and I think it's the same one last November in which we were called, in his talk, he said, there's going to be a presidency of the high priesthood, which was restored on June 4th, 1831. That's in a revelation from the Lord. He gave the date, and almost nobody knew that that date had not been known before. And I did. I wanted to jump up and cheer, but then they called me to be first counselor, and I didn't want to jump up and cheer. So anyway, okay, I hope that clears it up. There's at least two levels, and I will suggest there's more than two levels. And they use that word of levels of priesthood in here. I get all excited because when you've had questions, you get excited when you find the answers kind of hidden in there. Anyway,
I'm gonna have to go.
Okay, thank you for glad you were here when you were here.
All right, we'll see you.
Thank you very much for attending. We're just going to do three more verses anyway. Any other comments on? I think we've got that pretty well. See, we did Valera. Lisa, could you read us verse 20, please?
Yeah, just one quick comment. Sure. So these judges that were set up, I'm assuming that's similar to the judges that were set up in Nephi's time, right?
Oh, not maybe similar, but that was different because they had a chief judge. I think the lower ones were probably yes. Don't know. Short answer is I don't know. Now okay. I'll go on for half an hour.
All right. Well, I'll read verse 20.
Okay, but let me just comment. What made big difference was instead of a king, they had a chief judge. So that was the big difference. I don't know about lower judges, but they were afraid of getting a wicked king. So, okay, verse 20.
Well, I'm just thinking if Moses is setting it up, and then if the Nephites set up, that probably is something we're going to be setting up eventually too.
I bet. Amen.
Okay. And it came to pass that I, Moses, did all that my father-in-law had said, beginning with him, when I ordained him to the position of patriarch, for he was already high priesthood. After ordaining him to the patriarchal office, I summoned Aaron as my immediate counselor, because he stood beside me in the battle of Amalek, holding one of my arms. And as soon as I called as second counselor in the presidency of the Church of the Lamb, her, for remaining on my left, representing thus, each in his calling, my right arm and my left arm in the spiritual administration of the covenant people.
Okay, comments.
God, it occurs to me that Jethro is familiar with a lot of the Egyptian gods, and it almost led me to believe that he may have been distracted by them, but yet he's already been got the position of the high priesthood.
Right. He had the high priesthood. In fact, he's the one who ordained Moses. In section 84, it gives the lineage of the Mosaic priesthood. And Moses was ordained by Jethro to the high priesthood. That was who ordained him. So, yes.
Well, he could have. He had the knowledge and he was ordained. But then he had all this other cultural stuff going on with the other ideas that there's a million gods out there. You can see how that kind of weighed on him. And I think he was really, really happy then when he understood in verse 16, you know, how there was just the true and one only God.
You know, a good point. We have to remember that Abraham sent away his wife Keturah and her six sons. Midian was one of those six sons. He gave them presents. They went to the land of the east, but then they're on their own, basically. And and by the way, when it gives the lineage of who ordained Jethro, that's all in section 84. Let me comment on that, and I'll come back to sent away. One of the ways I discovered it was shown to me about the Mosaic priesthood is that in section 84, when it traces the lineage of Moses back, it goes through Jethro and does not go through Abraham. It goes back and back into the lineage of Midian. And then it basically jumps to Melchizedek. And then it takes it back from Melchizedek and it goes to Abel. Not to Adam had the son Abel, and then he had a later son Seth. What's going to be the patriarchal priesthood, which is a higher level that I haven't talked about yet? That's going to go through Adam and Seth and down through Noah and Shem. Well, no, down to Noah. But Abel, the priesthood that goes from Moses, goes back to Abel. The Lord, why did he go to the trouble to explain that it went through Abel in section 84? And that was when it was shown to me that it's a whole separate line. Did that have anything to do with what you said? I forgot what you said.
No, I was just kind of coming.
Oh, I was going to go back to Abraham. So he sent them away. And you were saying, yeah, they're in this other world.
Yeah.
So Abraham has a son named Isaac. And Isaac has a son named Jacob. Isaac and Jacob both went to the school of Shem and Eber. This is in the book of Jasher. They spent years being trained in knowing about the Lord and knowing how God works. So they had all this schooling. The Midianites were all sent away with a bunch of presents. I'm amazed that Jethro did as well as he did. He's called to be the patriarch, and he comes from
people. Right, because they were all period.
You're breaking up pretty bad. Say that again, Steve.
He covered up an own perception. My gut feeling with long absences, like they were out in the wilderness for that long, usually leads to a lot of, you know, traditions and perceptions and changes to the point where the priesthood is lost and all those kind of things, or at least that's my impression. But yet here he comes and he's teaching Moses, or he's
right.
Malchus.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, it's amazing that they did so well, I think.
Right.
Okay. I think it's interesting that Moses does not say, the Lord revealed to me that it should be Aaron and Hur that are my counselors. Like in Mauricio, when Mauricio was shocked. And we were shocked. when we were called to be his counselors by the Lord. Moses doesn't say that. He says, the reason I called these two men is they were the ones that held up my arm. They were there when I needed them. They have been proven in a war. He didn't feel, it's like he didn't need a special revelation. Like that whole episode was the revelation to show that those should be the two men that are with him. And they were proven by their works before they're called. So anyway, I'm just making a note that he said that. Okay, let's go to verse 21. And see, Lisa read that one. Jared, if you would read verse 21 for us, please.
Okay, over time, I have chosen many capable men from all over Israel, and I set them for heads over the people, rulers, ones of 1,000, rulers of 100, rulers of 50, and rulers of 10. And they judged the people in small things according to the law of God. But the great ones left for me, Moses, the judge.
Yeah, to judge.
Oh, to judge. Yeah.
So, right. So a nice organized system where, and we have those in our courts today. I don't know all the names, but you start off with lower courts and civil courts, and then you work up to the Supreme Court. So it's a very similar system where small courts, Judge Judy can judge the small ones. and you work up to the big ones.
Can I still make a comment about the last verse?
Yes, please.
Because I found it interesting that the church is also called here the Church of the Lamb.
Right.
So
right. They don't know the name Jesus Christ yet. They don't.
No, exactly. Okay, yeah.
They don't have, they've just barely learned the name of Jehovah. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob didn't even know that name. But they don't want to say Jehovah too much.
No. Okay.
So yeah, the Church of the Lamb. But we're going to learn in the next verse, we're going to learn about the Church of the Firstborn. Which it's not the same as the Church of the Lamb, I don't believe. Any comments on verse 21?
It says over time he picked them. So maybe he was able to then get the law of Moses.
Oh, right. He's going to get the law the next few days.
Right. And then he goes forward.
By the way, we'll talk about what happens on the mountain next time in chapter 17, but let me just comment on the timing, because I think at the first of this, it says that they arrived. No, this is the whole thing after they go. It's at the beginning of the next verse. We'll do it then, but I'll just say it now. They arrive on the first day of the month in the wilderness of Sinai, of the month of Sivan, which is the third month. And they have a feast of the Lord in the law of Moses, and it's of the Lord. And so it's of Abraham, it's for us too. And it's called First Fruits. And it's on, they hold it on the, they, he, modern Hebrews hold it on the sixth day of Sivan. It should always actually be on a Sunday, six Sundays after Easter, seven Sundays after Easter, but it tends to be in the first few days of Sivan. And so they arrived here on the first, and he's going to tell them for 3 days, get ready, the Lord is coming. And then it's around the sixth, and I've got the exact day is on the sacred calendars. I think it is the sixth. Maybe it's the eighth. It's the eighth of Sivan that year on the Sunday. That's when he goes up and has, we're going to read about that next time. So be sure to come next week for that. Okay, let's read verse. Yes.
And another comment still on verse 20 is the position of the patriarch, because I also read in an article that there was a patriarch in the LDS church, but he died when he was 106 or something.
Yes.
And he was never replaced. And I was wondering if.
I'll talk about my next paper talks about that, but I'll say it very quickly. Well, no, I'll say it. Brigham Young did a lot of things right, actually, and he made a prophecy that if you ever see the LDS Church without a patriarch to be fully staffed, fully organized, it has to have a patriarch. If you ever see it without a church patriarch, you will know it has gone into apostasy. So that's an important statement. So we had a church patriarch until October of 1978. He was called the presiding patriarch. He is the great grandson. He comes right through Hiram Smith. They followed lineal succession all the way very well. And he was a problem to the church because he knew what his job was. And when he would speak in every general conference. And I knew the editor of the Ensign well because he published my articles. And he said they had to go, there's a saying in English, he had to put out fires that Eldred Smith started, because he would talk about his position as a patriarch and what he should be doing. And the apostles didn't want him, they didn't like him. Finally, in October of 1978, he was retired. So we have not had a church, the LDS Church did not have a church patriarch since October 1978, but he was allowed to have an office in the church office building and give patriarchal blessings. But he did before, he would preside over all the other patriarchs in the church, and he would go with general authorities to open stakes. He was a general authority. Now he was just a patriarch, and he was giving blessings in his office, I believe, the year he died at age 106. One day a week for 3 hours, he would give blessings. He was amazing. So anyway, so it's been a long time since the LDS churches have no patriarch. And there you go. Okay. If Steve, can you read the last verse 22, and then we're going to wind up for today.
Be glad to. I appointed 12 apostles afterwards, whom I sent to the promised land to return to the covenant people with glad tidings. I also appointed 70 according to the ancient order established by God from the beginning of the world, in the likeness of the heavenly order, in common accord with the church of the firstborn. And so I instituted among the people of Israel in my day the church of the Lamb of God, with all their offices properly organized.
Okay, thank you. It's not this verse. He uses both the term church of firstborn and church of Lamb. He doesn't talk about a difference though, so we'll wait till next week on that. Any comments on this verse?
No, not one, but I was curious. You mentioned that there's a holiday, did you say 6 weeks after Easter?
7 weeks after Easter.
So wouldn't that be next Sunday?
Yes. I believe it is.
Okay. Just curious.
And it's not well understood exactly. The Hebrews don't know a lot about what's supposed to happen there. They were celebrating the first fruits of the winter crop. Well, actually, that's another story for another day. It's complicated. I don't want to confuse you. Just know that there's the Ten Commandments were given on that day, and that's the Jewish tradition that you ask the Jews when the Ten Commandments were given, the first feast of the first fruits. In Greek, it's called Pentecost. Penta means the 50. It's 50 days. If you count Easter as the first day, it's the 50th day. And yet it's 7 weeks. It's also called the Feast of Weeks. 7 weeks after, which is on the 50th day. It's tricky. So here we're getting 12 apostles and 70. In the Bible, it talks about he sent 12 spies to seek out the land. In the church, you learn the job of an apostle is to go to foreign lands and preach. So these 12 apostles, they were, this is the secret stuff that's not in the Bible. These 12 men were not just spies, they were apostles. And see, it's been kind of clear because in the Bible it says there were 70 men that the Lord invited to go up on the mountain and meet with God. And they all said, now I'm not sure of this. I believe this was one time when they said, no, we'd like you go up. It's kind of like a volcano. We're going to read next week. There's lightning and smoke and all kinds of things going on this mountain, not very inviting. And everybody's going to want Moses to go up on the mountain and not them. But anyway, these 70 are like the 70 in the church and 12 apostles. So at the end of this chapter, he's now organized the whole general authorities, if you will, of the church, plus the lower leaders of 50 and 100, like bishops. Remember, he has millions of people that left Egypt. 600,000 men with their families. Yes, army.
I was thinking about the 12 apostles here for the first time put here, that it represents maybe the first reign or the first invitation with the lesser priesthood of the apostles and going into the land, you know, and the physicalness of it, you know, get on your feet.
Oh, and I didn't thank you. I didn't think of that. See, I told you before, apostles could be either the level that we call elder, or now I'll say Mosaic priesthood. See, the Mosaic level or the high priesthood. And before we were told that nobody else was going to be a high priest except the ones that already were. So the high priests are only the Jethro, the dad, and Moses, and Aaron, and Hur, I believe, those four are high priests. These apostles they're apostles, but they're going to be priests of Melchizedek, but they're going to be what we would call elders. That's a good example of the lower part of the high priesthood.
Okay, yeah, thanks.
Can we say that these 12 apostles are like the beginning of the missionary work?
Yeah.
They're going out, and we don't use the word spies until later, that it is in the book, but here we're just kind of talking about them going to the promised land and then returning with glad tidings. So
yeah.
I think we can think of them as doing missionary work. But I like the fact the very last it says that we instituted among the people of Israel in my day, so Moses is talking, the church of the Lamb of God with everything right. So the church of they couldn't say Jesus Christ yet because we're still in the Old Testament. So basically he's saying the church, the Lamb of God, is completely organized in the correct way as it is in heaven as it is on earth. So he's established that togetherness. And the sentence before it says, from the beginning of the world in the likeness of the heavenly order in common accord with the church of the firstborn. Again, they can't say Jesus Christ, but again, I think that part, when he's saying firstborn, is in relationship to the heavenly church. Maybe the Lamb of God it's on earth, but the firstborn meaning it's the heavenly, and it's tying everything together, saying it's correct, saying the two are interlinked correctly, and we're going to use this as the way that the church, God's church, is going to be set up. So it's not just the church of Jesus Christ, it's the church of God. And knowing that that this was established with the Israelites, and God is the same Alpha and Omega, then he has tied everything together, and this book ties everything together. There's no way to say this isn't true, that they didn't do that beforehand. They did it. And now today, it's being retaught to us that this is the way it's going to be, that Joseph Smith brought the restoration and we're continuing it.
Thank you. I see that it's time. We're ending right on time today, 11:30.
Cool.
Or for our time, 11:30. And so.
Valky hungry.
Yes, and so Valky's getting hungry.
No, I prepare myself.
Oh, okay. Very good.
I ate something.
Harm and Valky come to the Brazilian meetings at, it's 1 o'clock in the morning their time, and they show up for that. So that's amazing to me. Anyway.
We always have a wonderful Sabbath day.
It seems so exciting.
It's well, like
there's lots of
sometimes we have a meeting with Bento in the Saturday afternoon, and then at night the Paliosa meeting. And then in the morning I looked at my ward broadcast, you know, here in Groningen. So that was uplifting. And then dessert is a Utah dessert.
All right, we're the cherry on the dessert there. All right, well, if we work this right, you will have no time to sin whatsoever.
See? so true.
Yeah. All right, thank you all for coming. These are wonderful sessions. I'm so glad these are recorded. So we'll meet again next Sunday. We'll stop recording first and then see if there's more. Thank you, everybody.